Our top story at federalnewsradio.com is under the headline, two-year pay freeze proposed for feds. Federal News Radio's senior internet editor Suzanne Kubota writing that President Obama announced today a proposal to freeze pay for federal employees. According to the White House, the proposed freeze in civilian pay for federal employees would be for 2 years, 2011 and 2012, and would apply to all civilian federal employees, including those in various alternative pay plans and those working at the Department of Defense, but not military personnel. So in essence, it will affect the Pentagon's civilian employees, but not uniformed personnel. Suzanne Kubota writing, the chairman of President Obama's bipartisan deficit commissions proposed a 3-year freeze in pay for most federal employees. The commission's report's due to be released later this week. The White House blames irresponsibility of the past decade for the cut, saying the president inherited a $1.3 trillion projected deficit upon taking office and an economic crisis that threatened to put the nation into a second Great Depression. That said, the White House is why the president's decided to make the proposal and said it expects the 2-year freeze to save $2 billion for the remainder of fiscal 2011, $28 billion over the next 5 years, and more than $60 billion over the next 10 years. And some comments from Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike Causey included in the story headline, 2-year pay freeze proposed for feds by senior internet editor Suzanne Kubota. To talk about some of the implications of this, I'm pleased to be joined by Paul Rousen, who's managing director of World at Work, and there are a lot of things to chew on, Paul. Thanks for being on the show with me today.
Glad to be here, Francis. Thanks for inviting me.
Happy to do it. As you heard about this this morning, it's funny, there was one news source that put out a story just yesterday saying that the president was expected to sign a 2% increase or propose a 2% increase in the next few days, anticipating the locality pay deadline that Mr. Zients talked about and we heard about in the first hour of the program. That obviously didn't happen today. It's kind of caught everybody off guard, didn't it?
I think so. It's hard for me to comment on politically what happens from day to day, but you know what obviously is out there is there's a lot of concern about pay, and so when that's at stake, it sends shudders through your workforce and your management team and your HR organization.
This is going to require a new thought process if it even happens. We talked with Jason about the situation a couple of years back where pay freeze was proposed, Congress overrode it, and federal employees wound up getting an increase anyway. We could still see that happen, too, in this scenario. But even just the idea, I think, that the president is putting it out there is going to cause a different dynamic when it comes to the way hiring managers are going to be doing their jobs in government over the next little while.
Well, let's just say, for example, it does take place, and that scenario happens. The good news is that there are some things that can be done right now that can help mitigate what might be, a challenging situation. I'm sorry there, Francis. I'm working from my home today.
Oh, participating in teleworking. That's great.
You bet. The one thing that I think is going to be very important is that if these are the signals and these are the potential outcomes, I think managers need to be thinking right now, along with human resources, as to how they will continue to attract, motivate, and retain talent, regardless of the environment. At World at Work, our professional association is made up of 30,000 global members who are in the field of comp benefits and work life. And every day they have to be thinking and be fluid around how they adjust rewards and, most importantly, the communications around those rewards to employees. Because that's what sustains, your ability to keep people engaged in the work that they're doing versus stare out the windows and wonder what's going to happen to them and is this job going to be worth it?
Mm-hmm. The greater issue, it seems, in the federal government is more the fact that we'll start to see wandering eyes. There's a commercial for FedEx that's my favorite commercial on TV now where the leader of the office combines celebrations with meetings, and the last line that he's singing all of these things, and he says he wants to see one of his employees afterwards because he found her resume on the printer. And my thought when I heard about this morning is how many resumes on printers when people are thinking, you know what? I know what's going to happen here for the next 2 years now, and it's maybe not worth it. People who were thinking about moving on anyway will be maybe more inclined to do that.
Well, I think every year people take an inventory of, you know, what was this year like? What did I, grow? Did my manager give me assignments that were meaningful? Can I see line of sight to my work and the mission? And am I connected? Am I relevant? And whenever you're given pause around those things, you start to contemplate, is it worth it? And so companies have to be very, very cognizant and aware, not just at the end of the year, but throughout the year, of what of how they're rewarding employees, and are the employees getting a fair reward in exchange for the talent and the effort that they're putting forth and the results that they're delivering.
You and I have talked about this issue from a number of different angles, a number of different times, Paul. Does this announcement today change the dynamic that federal managers were dealing with anyway, which is we need to hire good people, we need to keep the good people that we have? Does it change maybe the way they strategize their jobs, or is this gonna, because of the pressures that some agencies are already under to find good people, especially in particular areas, does this just mean kind of more of the same, a kind of treading water for the managers?
Well, let's just say that you are allowed to hire and you're allowed to replace people, and now you've got a hiring agenda. It makes for very tough recruiting when you are really trying to attract talent on the basis of pay. And all our research and data shows that people join organizations for pay. It's not why they remain in organizations, but certainly pay is the lowest common denominator in making a decision. It's very, very important. And so this will have an effect on your hiring strategy, on your ability to hire. I've worked in private sector organizations in which our hiring was flat and our budget was low, and we had to come up with more creative ways. And it was the promise of more of a career development package. We couldn't afford to pay you more, but we were able to train you and develop you. And when the time was right and the money was better and budgets were back and the economy was back, you would be in a better company, in a better visibility position, with greater income potential in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kinds of guarantees that you try to make in the downtime. The challenge is that I'm not sure whether the current federal manager workforce has weathered these seas or seen these type of stormy seas before, and so that's the unknown at this point in time. The other thing is that, you know, when you're looking at scarce skill sets, the labor market's very competitive. Like right now, you may think that, you know, the federal government may be a safe and secure place, and that may have been, for a new employee in terms of job stability and income. But if that salient factor is gone out of the employee value proposition, that takes the luster off the recruiting. And it really makes it tough in recruiting, especially top talent.
When we talked this morning, you said that there are some lessons to be learned from the private sector, especially in the very beginning of this slowdown in 2008 and 2009. Let's take a break and talk about some of those when we come back, okay?
Sure.
Paul Rousen's my guest. He's Managing Director of World at Work on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose. We'll be right back.
Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, Dell, and Aview Technologies. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
freedom to vote,
democracy,
freedom to go outside and play with my kids,
a German Navy to serve my country,
every freedom that we have,
the right to raise our kids in peace,
my little brother,
my wife,
my kids,
our children's children,
the United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Profile America, Monday, November 29th. Newspaper headlines in Chicago on this date in 1895 told of the nation's first automobile race the day before, among vehicles which still looked like horse-drawn buggies. Six of what were then called motorcycles left Jackson Park in the morning for a 54-mile run to Evanston, Illinois, and back through the snow. Inventor Frank Duryea won the race at an average speed of 7.5 miles an hour. By 1911, the first Indianapolis 500 was held. That year, increasing interest led to sales of 211,000 cars, trucks, and buses. But horses still outnumbered cars by a margin of 33-1. Now there are almost 248 million registered motor vehicles in the U.S. Profile America is in its 14th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Census Bureau has introduced a new user-friendly internet tool that takes all the guesswork out of finding, downloading, and using data from economic indicators. For the first time, users can access data from several different economic indicators in one place, and all in the same format. Bureau officials say it provides an easy way to create data tables in text or time series charts in your favorite spreadsheet format. Users can select an indicator and choose data by an item, a time period, or other dimensions using drop-down menus. Of the Census Bureau's 12 economic indicators, 4 are operational in the new tool now. They include international trade, manufacturers' shipments, monthly wholesale trade, and quarterly services. The remainder are expected to become available through the course of 2011.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. You've heard of YouTube, but have you heard of MillTube? Similar idea, share videos, but do it securely. We'll find out why they need a separate platform. And could you be fired for what you post on Facebook? We'll talk to an attorney about what you need to watch out for. And we'll get an update on your TSP from the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Paul Rousen of World at Work is my guest. We're talking about the implications of the pay freeze that President Obama proposed. You can find the details of the pay freeze at federalnewsradio.com. And later on this afternoon, later on in this hour, President Obama himself speaking about the pay freeze, the reasons behind it, and how he intends it to work and why he's doing it. And Paul, I thank you again for being on the show with me today. You mentioned when we talked this morning that there are a lot of lessons that the government might be able to learn from the private sector and what they went through in 2008 and 2009. Talk about those. Talk about what worked in the private sector that might apply to the government to keep talent in particular, but also to bring new people in to do some of these jobs.
Thanks, Francis. First of all, let me just qualify that statement. There's things and lessons that could be learned from the private sector, but as you aptly pointed out, not everything might apply because not everything that the private sector is free to do is actually free and able to be done in the federal sector. But there's a couple of things in concept that can be done that the private sector learned when it went through its pay cuts and pay freezes. It actually went through pay cuts 2 years ago. First of all is that you really got aligned around leadership. Leadership really got aligned around the rationale, the reason, and the purpose. And the messages were very, very clear and were communicated consistently up and down the organization so that there was a real understanding and trust that what was happening in the organization needed to happen, and there was an objective and an outcome. And in many cases, the leadership painted a vision of what would be the result and what the success would be and how that ultimately would benefit shareholders and the employees. So that was very important as a rallying point. And then everything was tied back in communication around that. But some commitments were made. First of all, cut where you need to cut positions. I mean, the first thing before you limit or cut people's pay is to eliminate jobs that don't add value. So the first thing organizations typically did was take and examine thoroughly the value and necessity of every job. Was it core or not core to the business? Could it be outsourced? Was it even necessary anymore? And then the next thing they did was they really took a look at who was either not performing in their job or whose talent was not aligned in the right position. And that was an exercise and an opportunity to eliminate chronically poor performers who were taking money and pay from other good performers, or people who were just a bad fit for a job, and it was because maybe no fault of their own. They were placed in it. They were told to do the job, asked to do the job, and they realigned that talent. So basically, they started to put all the aces in the right places. The next thing they did was they set aside budget resources for their top performers. They realized that no matter what happens, every organization to succeed and weather a storm needs to retain top talent, and it has to find a way to prove to that talent that they want it to be there when they reemerge and come out of the other end of the storm. So they set aside bonuses, career development opportunities, training budgets, conferences for people to attend, things along those lines in which they were able to communicate effectively to their top performers that they were important to the organization. And then they didn't hold back promotions. Where people were worthy of promotions and there was a job that needed that leadership and there was a candidate who was poised and ready to take that promotion, they promoted the employee. They did not slow down promotions. And they certainly didn't ask somebody to do a bigger job that they but keep them in a less visible and a lower titled position. They promoted them. They didn't always give them pay increases, but the promotion was important because that guaranteed them an increase when times were better and they'd be the first to see the increase.
Mm-hmm.
So it's these are the kinds of things that that private sector did and did effectively to weather the storm. The top companies did that, and they're now reemerging, and we're seeing now our salary budget survey shows that for the first time, you know, unfortunately, the private sector has now come out of this storm, and they're starting to reward their employees, especially their top performers, in a distinct and meaningful way.
If I was going to boil down what you just said, I think I would say it this way. Companies that were successful in recruiting and retaining top people, even in challenging times, figured out ways to reach out to those employees and say, we value you, you're making a contribution, we really care about you and your personal and professional success. We're just in a situation where right now we can't show it with a little something extra in the envelope, but we're sticking with you and we hope that you'll stick with us. Is that a fair way to characterize that?
I think that's absolutely perfect. I couldn't have said it better.
Well, that's the end of this conversation. I'm just teasing, Paul. There are a couple more things I want to talk to you about, including maybe drilling down into the numbers with me a little bit when we come back from the break on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Paul Rowson is Managing Director of World at Work, my guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, talking about the potential implications of the federal pay freeze proposed by President Obama today. Back in a moment on In Depth.
NBC News Radio, I'm Bart Necker. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has joined the growing list of officials condemning the WikiLeaks release of top-secret diplomatic cables. She says there's nothing laudable or brave about WikiLeaks' actions.
It puts people's lives in danger, threatens our national security, and undermines our efforts to work with other countries to solve shared problems.
President Obama is proposing a two-year pay freeze for federal civilian employees to help rein in the deficit.
These are also times where all of us are called on to make some sacrifices, and I'm asking civil servants to do what they've always done, play their part.
It was a good Black Friday weekend for the nation's retailers. The National Retail Federation says the average Black Friday weekend shopper spent $365 this year compared to $343 last year. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Barton Eckert, NBC News Radio.
Want to know a secret? CBS Tuesday is the hottest, sexiest night of the year.
The 2010 Victoria's Secret Fashion Show. The most beautiful women from around the world wearing almost nothing.
It doesn't get much hotter than this.
With musical guests Akon and Katy Perry. The 2010 Victoria's Secret Fashion Show. Tuesday, only CBS.
Your child has a fever, and of course you worry. You're a mom. That's your job. But there's no need to worry about which medicine to choose. Fact. Children's Advil brings your child's fever down faster than Children's Tylenol. And Children's Advil keeps that fever down longer. Nothing's proven better on fever, not even Children's Motrin. For relief you can trust, look for Children's Advil in the cough cold aisle now.
Among OTC pain relievers, brands are trademarks of their respective owners, based on reducing fever below 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
In today's shrinking economy, one industry is growing rapidly: cybersecurity. As cyber threats continue to increase, so do new job opportunities in both the public and private sectors. The Center for Cybersecurity Training at UMBC Training Centers is preparing the new cyber workforce to fill the jobs and meet the growing need. Here, individuals and organizations receive the knowledge, skills, and certifications required to protect our nation's vital networks, systems, public infrastructure, and information. UMBC Training Centers offers flexible class schedules and locations in Maryland and Virginia. And as one of America's recognized leaders in professional, scientific, and technical education and training, we offer advanced programs that are second to none. Cybersecurity jobs are here, and more are coming. Get trained for them now at the Center for Cybersecurity Training at UMBC Training Centers. Visit cyber.umbctrainingcenters.com. Go to cyber.umbctrainingcenters.com and register for a free webinar today.
40 kilometers northwest of Kandahar, Afghanistan, at a remote desert military base, American soldiers are playing video games. There are cold drinks, snacks, comfy chairs, and an internet connection. It's the USO To Go program, and it's just one of the ways the USO supports our troops, lifts their spirits, and serves as a link with the American people. Find out how you can help. Visit us at USO.org. The USO, until everyone comes home.
As you travel home after the long holiday weekend, keep in mind that the way you drive can actually have an effect on the environment. Thousands have logged every car trip they make, so Deb Niemeyer, a University of California engineer, can combine their travel habits with vehicle data to see
how people's driving behavior connects with the pollution their cars actually produce.
She says it affects smog levels, even global warming.
Absolutely. High speeds and low speeds and very aggressive driving all increase your tailpipe emissions.
Niemeyer says you should aim for steady speeds between 30 and 50 miles an hour. Her work is also inspiring new traffic and car engineering.
All these things combine together to really make a difference.
To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Profile America, Monday, November 29th. Newspaper headlines in Chicago on this date in 1895 told of the nation's first automobile race the day before, among vehicles which still looked like horse-drawn buggies. Six of what were then called motorcycles left Jackson Park in the morning for a 54-mile run to Evanston, Illinois, and back through the snow. Inventor Frank Duryea won the race at an average speed of 7.5 miles an hour. By 1911, the first Indianapolis 500 was held. That year, increasing interest led to sales of 211,000 cars, trucks, and buses. But horses still outnumbered cars by a margin of 33-1. Now there are almost 248 million registered motor vehicles in the U.S. Profile America is in its 14th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
G.
Join Input's teaming seminar for the Army's Communication and Transmission System Program contract. This event allows businesses and service providers to meet large and small prime contractor candidates to discuss Army CTS opportunities through speed dating rounds. Join Input, the authority on government business, December 14th at the Ritz-Carlton in McLean. To register, go to ctsteaming.input.com or call Input Events, 703-707-3698.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Paul Rowson, Managing Director of World at Work, and we're talking about the potential implications of the pay freeze proposed by President Obama today, a two-year pay freeze for calendar year 2011 and 2012, and you can find all the details about the pay freeze at federalnewsradio.com, and also you can hear from President Obama in just a few moments on Federal News Radio. I'll replay his comments from about noontime today where he talked about this issue at the White House. Paul, the one argument about this issue might be the math that's involved. And for example, somebody in federal government makes $100,000 a year, and instead of getting what people expected, which was a 1.5% pay increase for 2011, they get a zero. That means their paycheck will not grow by $57.69 gross when you break that down over 26 pay periods in 2011. Why is that a big deal? Why do people get so excited about that?
Well, I alluded to this earlier, Francis. You know, there's a psychological and emotional factor when it comes to pay. You know, when it comes to marketing, free is one of the most powerful words that you can use. But saying no pay increase can be just as powerful as a negative, as a demotivator for people, especially when they see others now getting increases, they see the economy coming back, they see their bills going up, and that's just much harder and less palatable, even if it's for $57. It's a psychological fact that's saying, you know, I'm going to work this year and I'm going to not get an increase. That's a very, very tough concept to sell.
Mm-hmm. All right. What should we take away from this? If I'm a hiring manager in government overall, what one concept do you want me to take away from all of this discussion and all of this debate and the comments that we see on our website and so on and so forth?
Leaders need to communicate. This is a time in which internal communications is going to be absolutely essential. Now, I know that communications is not a substitute for pay for some people, but the alternative is no communication and saying, look, accept it. I can't do anything about it. This is the way things are. Even in the private sector, you know, these mandates were, and decisions were made. World at Work's not here to opine on the wisdom of any company, whether or not it should reduce pay or cut pay, and just like we wouldn't judge what the president or anyone else might have on the table here. But if, in fact, it does happen, what we do know and what we have seen in the realm of HR expertise in our profession is that communication is absolutely key and essential to how you accept your, how you help your people adapt and adopt through this. Communication of how you're going to reward them in ways that you may not be able to do financially or in new ways that may not have been tangible to the employee before, through telework, more flexible work, understanding and being empathetic of what your people are going through. And this is a skill set that managers will have to quickly acquire and adopt and adapt. And employees are going to have to be communicative too. It goes both ways. So whatever happens, it will be challenging, but the key word and the watchword for the day is communication.
How do I brush up on some of those skills if I need to?
You can come over to... No, the way you can do it most likely is just talk to your employee. Don't hide behind a desk. If you're an employee, don't be fearful of walking into your manager. Going to impact you and what it represents, and you know, employers and employees can who care about each other can find their way. Managers and can usually find a way to weather a storm if they're talking, and it's not a substitute for pay. But when it's all you've got, it's better than the alternative, which is burying your head in the sand and going home every day, resenting what's going on, and feeling as though your boss doesn't understand, and a boss wondering every day whether or not their employee is going to give them their best effort. So those are the kinds of things that are very important under these circumstances.
Paul Rousen, great advice as always. Thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you, Francis. It's great to be here.